Salam sejahtera, anda bersama Sinala Huda dalam Awani Global. Dan untuk jam ini kami ingin memberi tumpuan kepada isu perkauman, khususnya isu perkauman dalam negara dan juga dalam konteks antarabangsa. Ini susulan laporan Racism in Malaysia ataupun Malaysia Racism Report yang dikeluarkan oleh Pusat Komas baru-baru ini, yang antara lain laporan ini mendapati insiden perkauman ataupun diskriminasi terhadap kaum dan juga xenofobia meningkat pada tahun 2022 dan ada kaitannya dengan pilihan raya umum ke-15. Jadi untuk jam ini kami ingin membincangkan lebih lanjut mengenai dengan apa peranan yang patut dimainkan oleh Malaysia untuk menentang isu perkauman dan juga dalam konteks antarabangsa. Dan bersedia bersama saya untuk mengulas lebih lanjut dengan mengenai dengan laporan ini, Gerald Joseph, pengarah Pusat Komas. Thank you, Gerald, for joining me today. Izinkan kami teruskan dalam bahasa Inggeris. Gerald, first off, tell us about the overall findings in the annual Malaysia Racial Discrimination Report by Pusat Komas in 2022, which saw a spike in incidents of racism, racial discrimination and xenophobia.
So I think, we always hope for the miracle that it will drop, but it hasn't. So yes, it has seen a spike. And just to put it in context, that I don't think we've captured everything. It's what is reported by the media, online, mainstream media, and also Pusat Komas' own complaints app. So the incidents we recorded is 82. So big jump from 55 last year. So, but many people who look at the numbers say, hey, something is wrong. There's more than this, you know, which is true. We agree, which is more than this. But if your offline conversation and the commentaries that you make, that probably is not captured. We are looking at the main news headline. But I think we are at a juncture where it is no more a hidden secret that race and religion is exploited. Yeah. And it's dangerous because it opens up a lot of unhappiness and then some baiting, and people sort of believe and buy on this, and then you're stuck to undo this. So I think in that framework, this 82 incidences that Pusat Komas captured, tried to capture it in different forms. So of course, we use an international definition of what racism is, you know. Mm. Discrimination that is based on any form of differentiation, dispossession, marginalization on many grounds. It could be ethnic, race, religion, language. So the list is long, and this is an international definition. Yep. Not very far from our constitution. Mm-hmm. But I think then we looked at whether it was had angles of racial and religious politics, you know. Mm-hmm. So when people in the political sphere, and I think we just came out of GE15, I hope there's no more GE for next 5 years. Mm-hmm. But and then we look at expression sometimes done by not by government or politicians, but people. Provocation, like, oh, I don't like you, how come, your color, you know. And then the other one is we looked at the education sector. Some incidences that come up in the education sector. Sometimes you don't know where this thing started, but it is there. And then in other sectors, it could be in private sector. Xenophobia, the fear of the other, usually is the foreigner, you know. Yep. And this sadly has grown tremendously after COVID, this xenophobia. And the final one is we're looking at actual policies of government that may indicate they are racially discriminating. So on all counts, it has increased a little bit more. But I think the biggest jump would be racial and religious politics. Mm. And there could be an overlap with the election that we just completed.
Yeah, on that note of racial and or religious politics, if we look back at the reports that has come out in previous years, that's the one trend that has been consistent in most years, and even in 2021, 2022, that trend of racial and or religious politics raked in the highest number of incidents, which is probably not surprising to most of us. But how do we actually define racial or religious politics, and what are some of the most common contemporary examples that we can see in politics today, especially with GE15 last year?
So in racial and religious politics, it's a political party or candidates or people from the political branding of a particular race and religion can claim that they are the only suitable political party candidate ideology because of their race or ethnicity, you know. So this is dangerous because you say, okay, you vote me because I'm you and you are me, you know. Mm. That's one kind of racial political representation. The other one is fear-mongering. Mm. If you vote the other side, it will endanger us we are another ethnic group, you know. So if you vote the Chinese, it may worry the Indians or the Suluks or Sabah. So everybody is playing one against the other. That's fear mongering, right?
Yeah.
The other one is supremacy, saying that this country belongs to us, our history. You know, all the others came second, third, fourth. So please, let's not give them. So that kind of supremacy also exists. You know? So this is some of the racial and religious politics that we picked up leading for 2022, as well as leading up to GE15.
Yeah. I mean, the examples that you described, these are really nothing new.
Yes.
But surely with social media influencing a lot of what we're seeing in politics and with the general elections, the 15th general election last year, what would you say is perhaps different or some new pattern or trends that you can recognize with the recent election and in racial or religious politics?
So I think the danger is, well, there are many generations or category of people who have spoken this. You're right. Well, in one sense, it's sad to say it's nothing new, but it should not be something we should be saying. But
yeah,
the younger generation has also caught on, you know. So some or other, TikTok has got a lot of spotlight because it's a younger generation's sort of playing field, right? And then they have also used this short messaging. There was one that was circulating, you know, telling a young boy who has no clue what May 13 is that happened 50 years ago, telling people about this incident that you and I know is sensitive because it is a very painful moment and we want to move beyond that. But to try to inflict people that fear by a young person, I think, is a new trend. People who have no clue pick and then put it together and then speak as if they were part of it. So, and this one is a bit more cryptic, blast text, you know, video young crypt, but people may not understand what happened in our history, but say, ah, this is dangerous. And then that danger is sold. And then people can link up to that. And I think that is wrong messaging because last election and, well, coming the next six state elections, we'll have this young 2 million plus voters who are on board. And they would be the ones needing to make a political decision. And if they're going to be influenced by this, you don't have a chance to articulate, you know, that there's a different understanding. There's no chance. Once it's out, it's out. So you can, of course, counter with positive messaging. But usually that U-turn and counter messaging is lost down. So I think that is a new kind of danger. I feel the younger people are excited. They just speak out. Without deeper understanding, neither nuances to protect themselves, you know. And this is, and I think we also got similar incidents of people putting a kris or a sword, no, and using that and just to speak about what happened, you know. So all this is like, why? Where did they get this idea, you know? I mean, if a young person wanted to put a kris and talk about, hey, you don't, you dare insult me, I can understand. No, it's a young people. But this is political history, what I call dark history of Malaysia, and coming out just as we went into election. So do I say this young person was influenced, was told by others, or the mood has allowed many of this false messages to be floating around? No, you can actually pick. Ah, okay, and I will become famous because TikTok is a famous tool. So I think that is a bit dangerous because we don't have a chance to dialogue with the young, and responsible political parties should know better. Sell a better policy. You can win if you can give a better education policy. You can do. I mean, but to bring down the nation in the name of winning through race and religion is pretty, I don't want to use the word, but I think it's pretty sleazy politically.
I mean, if we're talking about this in the global context, this isn't just a Malaysian case, right? We're not isolated in this. If we're looking at the United States, for example, even the younger generation are sort of riding on this new wave of political sentiment, also with some racial elements. In Europe, we're seeing that directed towards immigrant groups. So this is really not new, and Malaysia is not the only country facing this. But what do we make of this in the international context? I mean, you're looking at ties between racist narratives and social media. Is social media to blame? Is it the lack of social media censorship and control? What do we make of the rise of racist narratives, not just in Malaysia, but in the global context?
You see, if we didn't have social media, maybe we will be doing this interview 5 years in the future. So it just fast-forwarded everything. But then it's a tool. It's as neutral as it can be. It could have been 1 million young people fighting racism around the world, and we'd have a different type of Malaysia. So very much depends on how the tool is used. So it fast-forwarded, its speed is lightning speed, and that's what the joy and the danger of information. But in that context, then, what I make of this new world is not a world we complain about. It's a world where we celebrate new technology, new fast-paced communication, but also how can we now put other narratives on the block. And this is important because globally, you're right, you know, there are minorities everywhere. There's Islamophobia growing, you know, we saw of all these threats against a minority. Migrant worker, and we Malaysia also suffered sadly our own brand of xenophobia against the Rohingya.
Yeah.
You know, I always celebrate. I went around the world telling, you know, well, we never signed the Refugee Convention, but we are a compassionate society. And then comes COVID, and the narrative changed because somebody clicked two or three things, and now it's grown.
Yeah.
And we are unable to plug xenophobia. With some other clicks, you know, it's so much more difficult to undo it. So I think this new world we are in, it's easier to break, harder to mend, you know, and that's why I think this this racism that we are in is going to be stuck in the world much more unless political leaders, our bapa and ibu politik and bangsawan stand up and actually says cukup lah. You know, cukuplah main jangan api-apikan isu ini. Ini Malaysia untuk semua, you know. A country for all. But we have too few people actually coming out and saying that because they are worried the next election, somebody will use that against him or her.
Yeah.
And I think if we can find more statesmen and stateswomen standing up and playing to the gallery of nationhood, not playing to the narrow gallery of votes, I think we'll go a long way ahead. But sadly, I see many politicians, even the most seasoned politician in Malaysia, is now coming back to playing racial cards. You know, and that's sad. You know, after so many decades of trying to lead the nation, and he is now fanning race again. Yeah.
It's interesting you mentioned about the role that must be played by political leaders about our bangsawan. Interestingly, in your report, we don't want to, you know, baselessly point fingers, but it's also interesting to see the political parties responsible for making these claims promoting racism, racial discrimination, xenophobia. Can this be seen across the spectrum, or is what was it easily recognizable which parties were responsible for these claims?
So I think while the report is a whole year report, but during elections, Pusat Komas set up a team to do online social monitoring. So what was reported online or commented by candidates or their parties were monitored. So in the period of 2 weeks, we picked up the numbers are not so daunting. You may say, no big deal, you know, it's just 24 incidences in 14 days. But this is what I assign, not to individuals, individual much more, to a candidate or to his party. From that small sampling, every day we monitored, and the biggest day was day 11, there was 5 incidences. But interestingly, we found what Komas came to the conclusion was Perikatan Nasional had 9 incidences on this front. Barisan Nasional 8, GPS 3, the rest was Warisan, Bebas, others, PH1111. Which means that you kena lekat with some play of race and religion. But on the two top players who used it, we analyzed it twofold. One is you are selling that I'm the rep. One of the parties say that I'm the genuine rep of the Malays or the majority of the Bumiputera. So you please vote me. So it was not like saying that side is super bad, but you please vote me because I'm your rep. You know. So it's that. The other one, PN, was more that, if you don't vote us, you will give the country away to the other. So this is dividing the country, and that's very divisive, you know. So I think I'm hoping the next state election, if you want to vote Perikatan or BN or PH or whatever, please don't choose them based on race and religion. Although it's the most easiest one to pull. You know, if somebody comes and sells you many products, I've had enough of salesmen or saleswomen. Mm. But if somebody comes and tell you about religion, suddenly you say, oh, you know, some or other religion or some or other you and I are from our ethnic branding and we come from the common group. It sort of draws a different kind of attention. I think Malaysians must be able to realize or have a new hearing skill to differentiate if somebody is toying with us, because this is an insult to us. I don't need you to tell me about my faith. I don't need you to tell me about my identity. Mm. I know who I was born to, my parents, my grandparents. They're around, I know. Yep. Why do I need you to validate who I am, you know? And my faith, I'm good in my faith, whatever religion. I don't need you to protect me. Malaysia has enough protection for all religions, especially Islam. You know, it's good. But the very fact that people think that they can sell to you a product to protect your religion and race, for me, first of all, it's false narrative. It's a falsehood in salesmanship, and it's not necessary. We are a nation which is mature, and you sell what you can do to better the nation, not segment us as we are. But this is not just our case. Now it's happening in even the Western world. Yeah. You know, more of the minority parties are getting some more votes, and they are very right-wing. They say, oh, you know, this country, kick out the foreigners, kick out the colored people. So it's a trend everywhere because it's very easy to sell this, and it's people, the clickbaiting is so easy. It's like, they belong to me. And also, the background is economic hardship. The background, people are struggling with many fronts. So then they need somewhere to blame.
Yeah.
During COVID, we blame our poor Rohingyas or the poor foreigners who had no clue what they did, but we blame them for every of our problems because we were desperate. You know, and this happened all over the world, just not Malaysia. But like that now, it's going to grow. The trend of very narrow segmentation and politicization of ethnicity and identity. And there's no countering, you know. So we need a whole movement again, Malaysians to stand up. Now, we've had, in our report, it's been great because we also covered 80 over incidents of very positive messages by so many quarters, from ministers to royalty to common individuals who are saying this country belongs to all, or let's celebrate. So I think it's not all is lost, you know. We still have some beautiful people and individuals who stand up, but we don't have enough. And that's why I hope our political leaders, as you stand for the next 6 state election, be a bit different. Guna game plan yang lain. Jangan main agama dengan bangsa. Because itu saya pun boleh main. Senang je. You know, kalau saya mula parti baru, saya kata, saya satu gang dengan you. Datanglah support saya. Kalau tidak, dia akan, then bolehlah. I can be Hindu rights ke, Christian right ke, Islam right ke. No big deal. You know, it's selling to narrow-minded people. And globally, that seems to be selling. I don't know what happened to the world of fast-paced information, sepatutnya banyak lagi yang benar-benar. Tapi kita lebih shock dengan yang tipu-tipunya.
Yeah. What will it actually take to convince certain segments or groups that they don't need to be so easily bought with racial or religious sentiments? What would be the alternative? I mean, you mentioned the need for a movement that has to grow organically, but that also takes time. And with the rise of racial and religious negative sentiments, rapidly spreading with social media as well. What do you hope to see with this movement? And if we're not seeing politicians spearheading, pioneering this movement, then where will it come from?
So I think, my first appeal is first, because politicians are always on the pedestal, right? They are probably in Astro every other minute, right? So if they speak the right language, message gets out faster. That's first. If our religious leader speaks their weekly message at the temples, the churches on Sunday or mosque on Friday, can you imagine how many millions will be hearing the same message every week? Then we say, eh, betul juga. Some or other, if there is a gang of good religious leaders coming, okay lah, I'm going to just talk that experience of God in this line. Yeah. And then we have another set of civil society leaders who can then also rise up and say, this Malaysia is a Malaysia for all. And this is why I think we are in a junction in our identity of Malaysia. Sampai bila kita nak main kita ni tick box bangsa tu kan? Bila kita nak tick box bangsa Malaysia? So I think that is the moment now that we need to come. You know, can we educate our children that you are Malaysian? Identity, you memang adalah datuk nenek dari mana semua, you tahu lah. But whenever there's a tick box, there's only one tick box we are going to. For only specific reasons like medical grounds, if some of these are needed, then you may ask the question why.
Yep.
But beyond that, we should stop this kind of game plan. But sadly, sekolah kita pun tak ada peluang untuk belajar ni. You know, there's no chance for us to have this conversation in the children's level, in the secondary level, where the TikTok users that made that is coming from our secondary school. We had no chance to have a chat with this guy or have a group discussion. And cikgu tu, eh, kenapa ni kamu buat macam tu, you know?
Yeah.
Why did you choose this? Buatlah perbincangan. Then at least we have a chance to unpack. And Pusat Komas, in between this, we do a lot of grassroots, small workshops. Only to appreciate our federal constitution equality, international standards. Dan bagi peluang untuk siapa-siapa tu bertanya soalan dan meluahkan perasaan. In those forums, and this is not in KL, in many places, Sabah, Sarawak and outside, many people ask basic question about, what is equality? Then what happens to, some even ask, Aisyah tu jahat ke tak? Then we said, apa tu Aisyah? Then we realize many people don't understand. Give them a chance to understand. And if we have this conversation, Malaysia is not going to lose. We're going to win much more. But we've not won enough in the political governance of Malaysia. You know, every time we bring this here, somebody will accuse the other side of playing politics. So I was very glad that the Speaker of Dewan Rakyat recently called out one of the MPs who was trying to politicize the Women's March. He's saying, hey, is it true what you're saying? Then suddenly I saw that MP backed away. Maybe it's time the Speaker and whoever calls out half-truth speakers. You know, and then he said, hey, are you sure? If you're not sure, keep quiet. Kalau sure, cakap lah, silakan, go ahead. And I think maybe that's what we should be doing to anybody who tells us online. Maybe we should have a line of the speaker. Are you sure? then that could be a movement, you know, to slow down people who always can peddle anything.
Now, you mentioned the question of identity, and surely this will reflect on Malaysia's identity and position in global politics, because we're seeing how Malaysia is now growing to become an increasingly more important player in international politics and as well as in the global economy. We're seeing Malaysia making a strong stance on humanitarian issues at times. So what kind of perceptions are there in the international community towards the way we're seeing racism play out in Malaysia right now?
I think we always have two trains running at the same time in terms of Malaysians' involvement globally and at home. We are great in terms of international solidarity. We speak up rightfully on the most difficult issues, Palestinian, the Uyghurs, Rohingya, publicly, loudly, and I really applaud Malaysia that we must continue to take that trajectory. But when we come home, that train takes a different route, you know. And people will know there is inconsistency. And I also say this because you're right. We are actually an important player globally. We take our membership in the UN very seriously. Yeah. We are a member of the Human Rights Council. It's like, wow, Malaysia berani kan? Kalau berani di sana, berani di Malaysia. So, but kasihan lah our diplomat kat sana tu have to defend us. When kita punya ahli politik sini main politik pula. So it's really difficult for them to make the case. But I think in reality, what is spoken outside is much more easier. How we embody that inside is going to be difficult. So I think globally, we need to help move in a more consistent fashion. Maybe the Prime Minister Anwar Ibrahim's call for a different type of society, you know, Madani society. Maybe that's what it is. Maybe it's an inclusive society. Maybe it's a compassionate society. Maybe where equal human rights belong to all expats. So I think maybe if that is a framework, then you cannot have one set talking good stuff and another set talking very regressive stuff. So I think we will be caught in this game because people will know and people say, you know, we know what you mean. No?
Yeah.
So maybe it's time we have global politics and national politics aligned. Mm-hmm. But that can only happen if politicians understand. Nah. Itu malang ni, I don't think many people understand this gameplay.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't even want to embarrass Malaysia in the UN. Because when we are speaking at the Human Rights Council, let's cakap tu serupa bikin lah.
Gerald, it's been really great speaking to you and plenty more I'd like to ask you, but that is all the time that we have today. Thank you so much. Itu tadi Gerald Joseph, pengarah Pusat Komas. Terima kasih sudi bersama kami untuk bincangkan mengenai dengan isu perkauman, terutamanya dengan laporan Malaysia Racism Report yang dikeluarkan baru-baru ini, dan diharapkan apa yang kita bincangkan hari ini, apa yang disarankan itu dapat dihasilkan, direalisasikan melalui satu gerakan ataupun movement yang dapat membuahkan hasil. Itu saja untuk Awani Global Jam ini. Bersama saya, Nala Huda. Salam.